This is Matt Franco, and you're listening to the Magic Word Podcast.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, we are finally reaching the end of our Las Vegas Chronicles with this episode, and I hope that you have enjoyed coming along with me on the trip. I certainly had a great time with all of these guys and chatting with them, and I hope that you have learned a lot along the way as I have. This week we are going to wrap up with Matt Franco, and what a way to wrap up the week. I got a chance to finally get to see his show on that Thursday night after a long day of chatting with some other people, actually a long week of getting together with other people. We were able to finally put this thing together then that evening, and he had given me a wonderful seat, sixth row center, so that way I got to enjoy the full experience. And I would suggest that if you get an opportunity to get to Las Vegas, number one, be sure and see his show. Number two, I would suggest that for a little bit more, you just pay the extra and get the better seats. They're nice leather chairs, with arms and everything, and they're comfortable. It's not like you would normally have in a Las Vegas setting in a showroom. It's completely different. In fact, the whole showroom is different, and they had recently remodeled this theater that used to be the Imperial Palace and then became the Link Hotel and Casino. So it's there on the Strip, and the whole experience is completely different. I like the whole ambiance of the whole theater and how that it's laid out. And certainly, I believe his show is very Spartan from the standpoint there are not a lot of extraneous things that are going on. The whole focus is really on him, on Matt Franco. He is a wonderful person with a outstanding personality, and that's one of the reasons that he had won on America's Got Talent on the season number 9. And shortly thereafter, apparently, they really got going pretty quickly and put this show together and prepared the theater. And so for the last 18 months he's been packing in the houses on a regular nightly basis with his show. And without giving it away, I will say that he does reprise a lot of the things that he did in the America's Got Talent television show. And so this way there are some favorites. It's the same thing like when you go to a concert, you always want to hear some of the favorite songs that you know of a certain group that they're going to hopefully sing, and they finally do get around to it. And same thing here, that there are some favorites that you enjoyed that he did, that he recreates there live each night. And he does reinvent magic. I just want to leave it at that. It was a very fulfilling show. I enjoyed it from start to finish. There was mystery, certainly, but it was not based upon big illusions and things, you know, boxes that do tricks themselves and him dancing around it. It was all pretty much character-driven. So again, a great show, something I recommend that you go and see if you're going to get a chance to go to Las Vegas. He does perform just one show per night, but I understand he does it 7 nights a week. So I just have to go to the link, which is LINQ, to their website, and you can find out about purchasing tickets the next time you're going to be there. I know Magic Live is going to be coming up in August, and when you arrive to Vegas, if you come in early or want to stay a little bit late, be sure to put this on your agenda as one of the shows that's a must-see. I do recommend this. So he does have a lot of great stuff. He talks about not only about his experience with America's Got Talent, which, of course, was completely different from others since he was a winner. The others might have gone pretty far along, but he made it to the top and actually has a little bit more of a unique perspective than some of the others who didn't make it all the way, as well as other kinds of things. He talks about how he developed his character, how he built this team of magicians around him who helped him not only during the television show experience, but also during his show experience there on the Strip. Again, this is a very interesting chat that we have together, and I know you're going to enjoy it. It was wonderful that he took the time after the show that we went backstage into his dressing room and sat down and had a good discussion for about an hour about a variety of things and working the college circuit and developing his show, etc. Anyhow, that's just kind of a preview of what you're going to be hearing, but now I'm going to let you hear it from the magician's mouth himself. Please welcome this week Matt Franco here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm here backstage following a show
that was fantastic. We're going to talk about that, and I'll tell you why I think it's fantastic and why you guys need to see it when you come to Vegas. And here he is, the star of the show, Mr. Matt Franco. Hey there, Matt.
How you doing?
I'm fantastic, and the show was as well. My first question, I was thinking, you know, as I said, these are just conversations, but I just had a question, a burning question. You know, you were on AGT, and you won, so how's that working out for you?
Well, I have a pretty biased opinion on that show.
Yeah, you think maybe a little bit?
Yeah. You know, you hear mixed things about that show, but obviously my opinion is pretty biased. You know,
yeah.
Magicians ask me all the time, and performers in general, should I go on the show? And of course my answer is yes. I mean, my experience was just so positive from it. But I think it was a great experience. It was certainly one of a kind. It was certainly life-changing. But even just like, not just the result, but the journey itself of being part of a machine that big. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty.
It's not like
amazing.
Being in a contest like at a magic convention or something by any means, but yeah, well, it's on a bigger national scale.
You know, I will tell you, I think any experience you get over the years helps for an experience like that. So whether it's, you know, I've done my share of magic competitions and just talent shows and things over the years, like growing up as a kid, throughout my teenage years, all of the above, you know, and. The Stars of Tomorrow show with SAM and all that, which I talk about in the show. I mean, all those things do help you, put you in the right sort of understand how those things work.
So you encourage young people, I guess, to enter contests?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if it's what you want to do, if you're interested in, you know, honing your craft and sort of like working on it, not necessarily to win, but for the experience of what it's like to prepare for a magic contest.
Right. But I think I would encourage them because it's not just for magic contests, because it also gives you confidence when you're going to be in business or whatever business is going to be, you know, dealing with the public, public speaking, it gives you self-confidence and everything, I think. And if someone is introverted, it kind of gets you out of that, you know, then too.
But. Yeah, I would argue that any performance opportunity, including contests, is a great way to gain experience. And look, I mean, even doing 7 shows a week here, I'm always looking to, you know, I think experience is the best teacher. So the more I can get, the more anyone can get, the better.
Yeah, I would say also, you know, however, I was just talking with Robin Leach, and he was saying that it seems that a lot of magicians use magic as a crutch, and they never get past that. In other words, and I'm mentioning this because it not only was it fresh in my mind, but I thought it was rather sage for someone who is not a magician, but just a magic fan, basically, to say that by using it as a crutch, that once kids learn that, hey, I can be popular at school by doing a trick or something. And then they realize, hey, well, now I can talk to people. Well, it seems that they can't let go of that deck of cards or a coin. They're carrying something around all the time because they need that in order to talk. You know, mm-hmm. When you really don't, after some point, you can put it aside and just kind of take your crutch away because now, unless that's what you wanted to do, is to pursue that, you know, continue as a magician, I guess.
Right.
Just kind of an interesting point. But as far as America's Got Talent and being on there, you didn't have like a show to put, you know, butts in the seat. I mean, like a lot of myself and other magicians, you know, get these calls all the time as you did before. Is, hey, you're going to be having auditions coming up. I really didn't have any end game, basically. So, what would I really want? But sounds like your end game was to get, obviously, where you did. Or did you have something that you wanted to... I mean, even if you got on once or twice, did you think, okay, well, this will help my brand or something?
Yeah, I had a much smaller game plan. I was successfully performing full-time at the time. You know, I finished college in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Rhode
from
Island?
University of Rhode Island. Yeah. And from that point on, right after I finished school myself, I started working the college circuit aggressively. I decided I'm going to have a laser focus and just perform exclusively for colleges. I thought,
you went to NACA and did all the showcase and all that.
Oh, yeah. Big time, yeah. And I didn't have an agent, did it all myself.
Did you
went
really?
To every region, showcased at nationals. All
that had to be difficult.
Oh, extremely, but I literally devoted like 100% of my time to it. Mm-hmm. I decided, look, I'm not going to take these gigs, I'm not going to take those gigs. Like, as soon as I started getting enough work, I threw away the restaurants I was doing twice a week, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, I'm just going to focus as much as I can on this. I think I'm the right age for it. I think I've got the right show for it. I built some material specifically for it, as you see with the ramen and all that. It still lives on. And I did that for 4 years, and I just thought, well, if I get some footage from television, meaning America's Got Talent, even if I can just get like a short clip, I figured I could add it to my reel or make it my whole reel, depending on how much time you get.
Yeah.
If I get lucky, you know, I can maybe get some footage here, and it will allow me to get more showcases to showcase in front of buyers.
Right.
It'll give me more leverage in terms of booking shows and just to try to bring the branding in that world to the next level. That was literally my only goal.
Yeah.
And I believe had I not won, I probably would have done that. I would have taken all this footage I had and applied it to exactly that same market. And even after winning, I didn't know what to do. I was like, wait, can I go back to that? What do I do? And at that point, I had to sort of surround myself with the right people and figure out where to go.
Yeah, you have to have a magic team. You know, whenever you get to a certain point, because I've talked to so many guys who have, you know, Leon Etienne and some others, it's like, okay, well, I got a plan for A and B, but I didn't think I'd get to C. You know, now what am I going to do?
I literally didn't know what to do. I was like, what just happened? What do I do now after winning? It was like, oh my God. Like, I can't just follow my plan of what I was hoping to happen, but it's a good mistake or a good circumstance. But I really was just like, it was overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
It was overwhelming.
I would think so, again, because then you're starting to get all this kind of recognition, you know. And I think what is fantastic is the way that I have seen America's Got Talent evolve over the years from the standpoint that magicians couldn't go past step one, basically, to a point where they were embraced and loved. And like this past year, you know, I think with, you know, Derek Hughes and... I think it was Derek, wasn't it?
Derek was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
We had the football player from the Eagles this year, which was great. You know,
there are a couple of magicians I thought that kind of make it in the top, made it to the top six or something, I believe. This
probably.
Year,
I mean, even my season as well, we had three magic acts in the top 12.
Was Eric Dittleman the year that you were there?
Was there what?
Dittleman?
Dittleman is a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
He did it
your neck of the woods.
Yeah. We met
I love him.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Yeah. We met in the college circuit years back, and he was really my people. You know, ask why to go on the show, why I did, and he was really my inspiration. He's the one. I don't want to say he talked me into it, but after seeing his positive experience,
I talked to him and said, "Hey."
I lived vicariously through him. I mean, I went and cheered him on.
Yeah.
In person.
Did you go to the?
Yeah, I went to all the live shows because at that time they taped in New Jersey, so I would drive over from Rhode Island and you know with. You know, his supporters, and we'd make Dittleman signs and cheer him on. And you know, he did great on the show. He did fantastic. And based on his experience, I said to him, hey, I've been thinking about these ideas. Do you think these would play on the well on the show? Because he has a good idea of what will play well on TV. He has a good knack for that.
He has a good eye. And also what I like about him is that, first of all, mentalism is really tough, number one. First and foremost, but try to make that, because it's all about your personality, you know, certainly, which your show is, and we'll get to that. But the fact that within 60 or 90 seconds that he got his personality and the mind reading, mental trick, you know, across, I just give him, you know, full plaudits for that. He's just done a great job.
Yeah, I agree, especially knowing what you're going through, the sort of emotional torture that it is to be on the show, and especially because it's live.
Yes.
It's live to live, so... anything can happen.
You know, that's true. And butterflies. You know, I've heard where that Johnny Carson on the Tonight Show years ago used to be that he would be behind the curtains and he would have butterflies. I mean, even him who, you know, but he was out before millions of people back when there were only three networks and whatnot.
Right.
But it wasn't until after they said, here's Johnny. And then he'd step out and he'd get all the applause and suddenly they'd start and he'd say the first joke and then he'd calm down. Everything's all fine.
Right.
And I think that that's a good thing because the butterflies and the emotion, the nerves help you to be a better show because you're on your toes. You know that everything's tingling. I think you know. And do you feel that way?
I mean, you know, I prefer to have them very much controlled.
Well,
I do.
No,
I really do.
No. But yes, exactly. Good point. Have the butterflies flying in formation.
Sure. There you go. Jeff McBride quote from Celebra Cadabra.
That's exactly. Yeah, you got it.
Jeff McBride was you know my biggest influence growing up.
Well, I can tell when you're flipping the cars, Jeff's cars, you're in the audience and stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously we have very, very different styles.
Well,
however, I really did.
You don't beat a drum or anything.
No, no. Okay. I couldn't pull that off, you know.
Or have masks and all
but
that.
But if I could have, I would have. But I recognize that quote right away. But no, it's true. I do want them to be flying in formation just to keep it all in control. I like to be in the moment and be able to sort of bounce off whatever's going on.
And that's kind of what you were doing then, I guess, when you're backstage then again. Because I would think when you're there with all this mass of people who are going to be on next and they're over there strumming their guitar or gargling or whatever, you know, working their whatever, that some of these people have just got to be... That's because, first of all, we as magicians are used to being on stage with an audience and handling an audience and how to do that. And it's just, okay, well, now you have the added thing with the camera, you know, and you just kind of have to put that out of your mind, as opposed to somebody who's going to be standing up or dancing for the first time or whatever, and they've got to have more nerves, be more nervous than a magician is.
It's scary, because you want to do the magic community proud.
Of course.
And whenever you finish your routine, it's not just like having a bad night where the however big your show is, whether there's 20 people or 200 people or 2,000 people, yeah, you know, everyone has a bad night.
Yep.
But when it's in front of 6,000 live and another 10, 12 million over the TV, and not only that, but as soon as you finish your act, it's going on the internet. Mm-hmm. As you're walking off stage, it's already being uploaded to YouTube by
somebody.
By America's Got Talent, officially.
NBC, okay.
And then people will copy it and they'll upload their illegal version, blah, blah, blah. But already, yeah. Boom, it's on the internet immediately.
Huh.
So, like, I would walk off stage and literally check my angles.
That's interesting.
Just to check my angles.
Because
you know,
have so many different cameras.
Make sure everything was okay, because it's live, there's no do-overs. And you want to, you know, you want to do the magic community proud. You want to make sure you're taking the proper risks to put together the best routine possible, but also make sure, you know, you're not exposing the gap. And this and that, and
you know, I was recently selected as being the magician for the Super Bowl in Houston, and we had auditions for that. And I took a cue from you because whenever the guys who were the judges were from Orlando and from Disney World, and so they were looking for talent. I mean, they know what they're looking for, obviously.
Sure.
But when I went into this big room, because there were places where the bands could set up or whatever, these guys were down over there at the end, and I was thinking about what you had done, and that is that it's like. You mind if I come walk down here? I'll just show you. And I went right over to their table.
Sure.
And I just started doing something and engaged them, as opposed to being back here. Because obviously that there is a relationship that's proportionate to the distance you are from the audience.
Sure.
You know, and so by engaging them like that, rather than standing back here, you know, and doing something, I think, and I got it, you know.
Yeah, well, congrats. That's awesome.
Well, thank you.
But really the credit goes back to Eric Dittleman, because he was actually the first one in the history of America's Got Talent to approach the judges' table.
Oh, he was.
And he did it at a time when it made sense. He did it back then, when you did your second round, there was no audience, so it made sense to approach a table of four people.
Right.
So, I mean, he was the first that, I don't know that he was the first that asked to do it, but he was certainly the first that was able to talk them into allowing him to do it. And there's something to be said for that. Mm-hmm. One, having the foresight to know this would work. Two, for getting them to agree to it, showing them something that they say, yeah, this is worth you approaching the desk for.
Right.
And then they let it happen. And then, you know, I was able to exploit that concept, you know, a year or two later.
Right, yeah. Dornbost is doing that now. This last season when he was doing, they're coming up and doing the close-up. And even Steve, what's his name, with the Rubik's Cube, you know, he was coming up. I mean, it seemed to be, now that's what they're doing.
Exactly. You know? There's sort of a format to it that works, that we found, I guess, that works.
Actually works. Now, when you were doing the college show circuit, was the show similar to, and some of the pieces that you got here, you mentioned the ramen noodles and whatnot. I mean, how much of that is a carryover?
Some of it translated over to the show here. You know, I did about a 60-minute show at the college campuses. Some of it I tried to transfer over to other shows that I do here in Vegas, and I found out it doesn't work the same.
Hmm.
You know,
through trial and error?
Through trial and error, sure.
Mm-hmm. But you got people like Johnny and everybody giving you advice, I'm sure,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Johnny Thompson,
because he knows
sure.
what's going to work or doesn't work. So, you know, Matt, you need to do this.
You know, it's interesting. You really... I had lines in my college act that would get laughter followed by applause. Like, literally, the college audience would eat it up that much.
But
and then you try it here in Vegas, crickets.
Yeah.
Because whatever...
Different dynamic.
Yeah, because whatever, like, pop culture thing I was referencing...
Yeah.
Didn't mean anything to anyone here, but it meant the world to an 18 to 24-year-old.
I was going to say, is it because of the demographic, or is it because of the fact that you've got an eclectic group of people here from other countries as well?
I think it had to do with the demographic here at the Link in Las Vegas being diverse, as opposed to going to a college in Ohio or California, wherever you are, it's so niche. It's exactly everywhere you go, every college you go to, you're hitting the same demographic of people, the same generation.
Yeah, I understand. So, and you can do the same show from place to place, obviously. And then when you're going back the next year, did you have a different act you were doing the second and third year when you're going to the collegiate circuit?
It depended. Normally, I could do this. If I was ever to change a show, I tend to change the first third of the show.
Uh-huh. 90 minutes, I guess. Is that right?
It was a 60-minute act that I did then at that time. Here we do 90.
Yeah.
But at that time, it was about 60. And I would change the first third just to get people excited, like, oh, he's doing new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then I would do also sort of like signature things that people I feel like would want to see anyway. Same thing with any shows.
But some of the things that you were doing on the college circuit, did you find that they were, did you ever have any of the kids, the college kids, who would say, I've seen that, or, you know, the last time, or, and I mentioned that because I remember the Banachek had sold, we were selling the psychokinetic pen, and when he would perform that, that if he got anything that was a negative by the people who had hired him, they'd say, well, we saw somebody before do that pen. Well, it was my invention.
Well, that's different. You know? That's different. You know, I was pretty close with everyone working the circuit. The guy,
so you knew what
they
were doing.
The guys were really busy. Yeah, I mean, and I want to know what they're doing so that I can do something else.
Exactly.
yeah, exactly. So... you know, it's as simple as a conversation of like, oh, you're doing this, okay.
Yeah, that's right.
You were here first or whatever, you know, and you make sure that you're, that's why you try to develop things that are, that feel different. You know, I couldn't walk on stage and do a Bill and Lemon because there's a chance someone else is going to be doing it, which is why I changed it and gave it its own thing.
Yeah.
I at least try to frame things in a way that feels different to them. Because some of the students are pretty magic savvy. They have a lot of magic on campus.
They know,
you know,
about, you know, certain props and gimmicks
and
whatnot.
Yeah.
So you gotta give them the benefit of the fact that they're not only intelligent because they're in college, but also because that they have seen things, know things, or perhaps had done magic as a kid also, you know a little bit of some of the basics, you know,
sure,
of that then as well. But I know what you mean as far as trying to clear, make sure that you're not doing something that someone else. I was working the Magic Island one night, and I was planning on doing linking coat hangers, you know, my Cadney's routine.
Mm-hmm.
And Invisible Ink was performing, and they have a signature routine. And when I got to the island, you know, I was going to be working in the parlor area that they had before they converted it. And I was planning on doing that, and then I saw they were doing, I knew they were there, and I thought, oh, I bet they're going to do it. And I watched their show first, so I took that out immediately, and put something else in. So you do have to be aware of your surroundings and what other people are going to be doing.
Yeah, I would be more concerned about that than repeating my own material, my own music.
What about here in Vegas? I mean, you know, there are so many magicians, and they're getting to be, you know, quite a proliferation on the Strip and downtown. Do you kind of check out, say, okay, this guy's doing that, and then you know, or you care?
Here in Vegas, it's pretty easy. Here
what,
in Vegas,
what do you mean?
It's pretty easy because... most of the shows are just bigger. You know what I mean? And we're doing something that's, I guess I'll use the word gutsy.
Okay.
Because it's a big room, but it's not large in terms of like the traditional sense in magic terms. It's not grand illusions. It's more intimate feeling show. So there's really very little chance for people to see this and get confused with, you know, a motorcycle or a car.
How many seat theater is this?
About 600.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it does make it fairly intimate. And then that was what I was going to ultimately get to, is how that I feel like that you bring that together, breaking that fourth wall quite easily with your personality. And it's easier to go down out on the stage, and it's not like you're just going in the first couple of rows. You're going all the way to the freaking back, you know, and up and down, and then doing some of your signature things that you've done on AGT. And I think that's one of the things, too. It's got to be that people want to see something from the show. Like, you know, I saw him do this, you know, and, oh, he's doing it. I hope he does that, you know. And that's kind of like, I've heard David Case, Silly Billy was giving a lecture once and talking about kids, how that they'll say, oh, I've seen that one. That doesn't mean, oh, you know, what it means is, I saw it and I want to see it again. It's kind of like, you know, when little kids want to watch the same movie over and over, there's that familiarity. And the same when you go to a concert. I want to hear, you know, this group play my favorite song, you know.
And you're upset if they don't.
If they don't. And so that's kind of, you're giving the audience what they want, you know.
I try to, yeah.
Yeah. And by engaging them, you know, not only... But it seems like you're kind of holding back a few things, so this guy, I hope he does. Oh, he did it! You know, so I think your timing and everything is really excellent. And the fact, as you say, that it's a small enough theater, you're really not doing big illusions, with the exception, you know, of one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else that you're doing,
and you don't see it coming.
No,
as a lay person, you really have no idea that that a stage illusion, quote unquote, is about to happen,
because you hadn't seen anything else to that point.
And at that point, you literally think you're watching what's probably going to be the smallest trick in the show. Honestly,
I mean,
it's
that.
Intentionally
tiny. Yeah, because you're focused on the hands. Yeah.
It's intentionally tiny. I'm super proud and happy about that bit.
That's very nice and timing. I mean, the gasps, I mean, not just the applause, but just, you know, unify, you know, across the theater, you know, when things are happening. And there were several of those moments where there were gasps. And that's what I have to give you again, you know, just a lot of credit, you know, for that and the structure of this whole thing. And that's why I was wondering whether this was a similar type of a show that you had done, you know, before, or if some of this had been manipulated and scored, you know, by Johnny and some of the guys, you know, saying, well, you need to do this and this and have these kinds of moments. And
it's a real mix. It's mm-hmm. a real mix of things. I've carried over versions of things I've done since I was a kid, like literally in elementary school. Mm-hmm. I've carried over bits that I thought I would never perform again that yeah. I did for America's Got Talent that Johnny helped me sort of recreate
yeah.
For a live setting that would work every
yeah.
night.
Yeah.
And I have some bits in here that are new for the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it really is just a sort of a mix of things. But was it similar to the shows I used to do? Yes, in that I'm the same character because I'm not playing a character. I'm myself.
That's important, and that was kind of what I was going to talk about as well, is how to develop a character. And your character is yourself. You're the same off stage as you're on stage,
mm-hmm.
and you help to sell that by talking about, you know, showing video of your youth and, you know, talking about your parents and growing up, I guess, basically,
sure.
In magic and all that. So, you know, people can empathize with you. You know, or they had a brother or a cousin or somebody perhaps who did magic or whatever. So,
mm-hmm.
and it's not cheesy. You know, I mean, the standpoint that
no, it's true. Actually, it's all true.
Yeah, and so you're not rubbing it in people's faces.
No.
You know, who may not have had those kinds of familial experiences.
Right.
You know? I just think that it's done well and not overdone. You know, and the set design is awesome because
oh,
it's clean. You know, it has a nice feng shui to it, the way that it's placed, and with the three monitors and the crystal ultra definition, you know, is just amazing, the way they move up and down. And there are not a lot of flats, not a lot of backdrops and sets, and you don't have all the stuff moving in and out. And so, as you say, it's a large theater, but there's an intimacy about the set design and the cleanness. It's very, very Spartan.
Yeah, thanks. It's a full production show, but we tried to keep it, we tried to make it, we didn't want to add too many bells and whistles for the sake of adding bells and whistles.
You had the perfect amount, in my opinion, because
thanks.
With the video and then with the pumping music, you know, different things at the right moments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got to give credit also to the sound guy back there. At certain times, obviously, you know, when you're saying something and he pumps it up or down, you know, it's, I mean, your timing and everything is impeccable with that. So you got a good team working with you. There,
excellent
too, you
team.
Yeah.
Excellent
mm-hmm.
team. I'm so thankful to have a team to work with because it all used to just be myself.
Yeah.
One man operation. Everything. Hitting my own sound cues on a little IQ on my belt, you know.
I was
know,
about and to say, do you use... you know, Carl Andrews,
mine,
or to use
MP3 Tech.
MP3
was
yeah,
the one that I used to use.
I used a Show Tech for the first, you know, with the mini disc. And then whenever Carrie came to the Show Tech with you know, digital, that's what I started using
mm-hmm.
then forever then too. And then I moved over because I had that with my iPad, you know, and that's
mm-hmm.
kind of handy. But
I'm sure there have been lots of advances in the technology since I've used it, you know.
Not a lot. Well,
no?
Not necessarily, yeah, because, I mean, that was just a couple of years ago. I mean,
Carrie Pollux was great. I mean,
yeah.
it never failed me, you
yeah.
know. It always worked, and that thing traveled through hell and back. It used to come all over the place with me.
Yep. Well, and Carrie always made such high-quality, you know, equipment. You know, back in the early days when he used to work at Magic Island, he was first developing a lot of the stuff. I mean, the Kate and Edith routine was something that he had developed in, you know, at the Magic Island and work that out. And the handling of that, you know, Frank Price is one of the guys who was who would say, well, you know, as far as this, if you actually can make it look magical rather than just a funny story, if you do this, you know.
Right.
And so you got a lot of assistance, you know. It's just but Carrie has and then, of course, giving it over to Pro Mystic and Craig
right.
Felicetti's just a fantastic job with all the, and that's another thing too, is I don't see you using a lot of electronic wizardry, that you're using your hands of manipulation, which I think is cool. I mean, when's the last time we saw Channing Pollock, you know, here on the strip? And I would compare you to him or Lance from the standpoint of
hey,
actually being a manipulation.
Thank you so much.
Because
wow.
there are so few people
yeah.
who can actually get away with manipulation. And again, whenever that you're integrating the video on that, it was kind of like America's Got Talent from the standpoint of, remember that guy who did the doves and he did something and they went flying, you know, into the video. And you're doing
mm-hmm.
that with the cards and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I heard people behind me and in front of me that were, you know, they were catching their breath as well. I mean, it's, I say, a simple manipulation act, but the addition of the video adds another dimension. It's like, that's good thinking. You know, I like that part.
Thanks.
Sense,
yeah.
Yeah.
It, you know, it adds
up. I'm just here to kiss your butt. I mean, I'm telling you.
No, thank
you. If I didn't like it, I would tell you. I'm trying
I appreciate
to,
that, too.
I'm trying to think of something I didn't like about it. You know?
Well, yeah, you know, just, again, it's adding production in smart ways. Not just for the sake of bells and whistles, but
yeah.
making strategic decisions as to where you're adding multimedia, where you're adding lighting, where you're adding music, where you're adding all these different elements, where you're adding other personnel in the show.
Yeah.
But, you know,
and that was
in a smart
simple,
way.
Too. You had a guy and a gal.
That's it.
It wasn't like you had a lot of dancers and there was no overt, you know, music where they come out and have to, you know, pushing the boxes around and everything. I mean, it was very, it was you, you know,
yeah.
Which is what people come to see. I mean, your brand is Matt Franco. It's not Matt Franco and Company. It's not the Matt Franco Illusion Show.
No, know? It's not. It's not. Yeah, it's a personality-driven show, and,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, and again, I think what's wonderful is that you have your character, which is you, and I talk a lot on the podcast with different people about developing a character. Have you ever tried to find a different character, or did it always keep coming back to, in your show, just back to you, or... In other words, did you... Well, I remember I saw the pictures like when you were a kid. Obviously, you know, when you wore tails and everything else, or, you know, tuxedo.
I think I just spent a lifetime trying to figure out who I was.
When did you find out?
Certainly after. Certainly after the age of... I must have been maybe not till I you know, got into college and then finished college, that sort of thing, was when I really figured it out and just started getting enough flight time in and performing. I mean, but I was trying to figure it out for all those years. You saw a video in the show of me wearing a tux and tails.
Yeah.
I mean, why? Probably because Lance Burton had that on. And as much as I was watching Jeff McBride, I knew I couldn't pull that costume off, right? So I put on the tux and tails because that's, you know, how I also was necessary for the dub
act,
I was doing.
Yeah.
But then I remember right around that age, and this is a really, I mean, this is embarrassing. I must have been 13, 14, 15, right in that age group, you know, right as I'm going into high school, right? It's a weird age for all of us. It's puberty, you know?
Puberty, right, right.
And I went through this stage where I started really started to understand pop culture and watching the MTV Music Awards and those things. So I'm watching all my VHS World's Greatest Magic tapes that I taped off television, and then I'm watching all this, you know, whatever was on TV at the time, Usher or the music acts and these things. And I'm like, well, this is interesting because the magic seems really dated in terms of the music that's being used, in terms of the costuming. How come, you know, these famous singers aren't wearing a tux and tails?
Ah.
And that's what I... That's
that's so, a light coming on there.
So look, there was a light coming on, but I didn't handle it correctly.
Okay.
I think I was on the right track.
Okay.
I was on the right track of... be yourself, don't be what you're seeing these people do, you know? And I was on the right track, so I thought, okay, I shouldn't do what I'm watching these magicians do from the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But it also doesn't mean you should, you know, wear whatever, you know, Justin Bieber's wearing, which it wasn't him at the time, but that would be like the modern day correlation.
Right. Get
sort
all
of
tatted
thing.
Up and whatever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm watching, so I all of a sudden I threw the tuxedo away, not literally, but I decided I was going to wear these ripped jeans and this like open button down shirt, whatever, you know, and this leather jacket. And I developed this persona where I was like this, like, bad boy meets boy band. I mean, it was really terrible, terrible and embarrassing. And I was doing my act to Sandstorm. You know, it was like this techno music.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I shouldn't admit that there are videos of this out there. I will not be uploading them. No, no, you cannot Google them. And so anyway,
I got a visual image of this right now.
Oh, it was so bad. It was really terrible.
But you saw that was bad. I mean,
I saw it once my friends made fun of me enough, which was great. I'm thankful for that.
Yeah.
I realized, no, this isn't good. I'm taking myself too seriously. It's not working. Something's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I.
Where were you working that act? I mean, you weren't doing colleges at that time.
I
mean,
no, I was...
You were doing
was,
corporate dates or comedy clubs?
Oh, no. I was 15 at the time, so I would do, you know, the school talent show.
Oh, okay, okay.
I would do magic competitions. Okay. I would do everything in this persona.
Yeah, yeah.
Anywhere that would have me. You know, okay. I would do other schools, you know, middle schools, high schools.
Retirement homes or something.
Anywhere that would literally have the act, I would do it. Some places, like retirement homes.
Yeah.
This act made no sense.
Yeah. But, $50 and I'll do the show for you. You know? Okay, it's too much. It's fine. Okay. I just need a place to be bad.
You know, and I was on the right track though. I realized that I couldn't just do the sort of cookie cutter of wearing the tuxedo. But I realized that, you know, the light went on. It was just be me. That's what it was. And I think you know, once I got to the point of America's Got Talent, I realized what me was. And it was just me. I didn't have to be this cool cat. I didn't also didn't have to be this magician from the 80s. I could just be myself.
Yeah, but you were dressing like your audience, which were the college kids, you know, I guess, and basically too, which was the same thing that Hunan was doing at the time when he was wearing evening dress. The people were coming to see his show in evening dress.
Yeah.
And Houdini would wear what the people were wearing. And so the problem is, I think that a lot of magicians perhaps are trying to be something else rather than, you got to look at your audience. I mean, when you're standing there, you're looking, you're seeing people like me in jeans or whatever, you know, that you dress like what your audience is going to be because they can relate to you.
Sure.
It's the same thing like with, what's that called in psychiatry or psychology, imaging or something, so that, you know, it's like you're sitting like that and I'm sitting like this, you know, or there are certain things you do. Whenever that you're going to go like this, you know, you move your hand or whatever, that a person will start imaging you then also. And once that you image somebody, in other words, if I'm watching what you're doing, you will relate more to what I'm saying because subconsciously, you might get making, you know, my point, you know what I'm talking about. You've heard this before.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the same thing, I think, if you watch the audience, that you can relate to them by dressing like what they are and being what they want you to be. You know?
For me, it was just about being myself. Look, Matt Franco in real life is not a fashionista, period. I'm never going to be.
Okay.
So why should I dress like one on stage? I shouldn't. I need to be organic to who I am. And it wasn't so much about developing a character, but it was more about zoning in on who my character really is. And on stage, I'm just more outgoing version of myself with better timing and better lines, you know.
I've heard that so many times that people say, be a larger version of yourself.
That's it. Yeah. That's what I do. Yeah.
But again, unless you happen to be really a really bad person.
You know? Oh, jeez.
And you don't want to
be. Then you might want to play a character.
Play a character.
Hey, some people play characters and it works out great. And I love that. And it for me, it's just, you know, I like to come from a place of truth. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what comes naturally to me.
Well, look at what David Copperfield had done over the generations. You know, every decade, if you go back and look at his posters about how that he has the hairstyle of the 80s and then the 90s, you know, and he was wearing leather or that he was on a motorcycle or whatever, and even his artwork on his posters would reflect the art of the day.
Yes.
And then the next decade would be something else, whatever it is, and he was going with it, and he wasn't staying back in the past. And so he was topical, I guess. Mm-hmm. And his last television special, as I recall, unless he's had another one, was shortly after one of David Blaine's earlier ones, and he did some street magic also. It was less than what his typical Big Illusion show was. The last thing, it was kind of like, okay, well, this must be the direction that they're going. And he hasn't done anything. And I haven't talked to him. I don't know what the deal is, but I guess maybe he's just not feeling, you know, that he wants to go out and travel and try to compete with, you know, being a gothic guy like Chris Angel or something.
Paying attention to what's going on in pop culture around you and outside of the world of magic that we can very easily get stuck in all the time is important, right?
Yeah,
and as a 15-year-old kid, did I execute it correctly? Absolutely not. But I think I was on to the same philosophy that I sort of, you know, so there were lessons learned there, and I'm glad I learned them then instead of later.
Well, yeah, as you said, you're glad you had good friends who were going to be honest with you as well, because you could still be living in that, and you wouldn't be sitting here talking right now.
No, you know? I'd still be in that alternate reality.
Think, what's wrong with you? You're liking me. That's right, as you kind of squeak with his leather pants. Or whatever,
yeah, I was such a fool.
But it's good to know thyself, you know, certainly, like that. Well, so then with... with this theater, did they build the theater basically here? Because I remember this was the old Imperial Gardens and Imperial
Palace.
That's what it was
before they rebranded it as
and,
the Link.
Yeah, and seems like I'm trying to remember what movie it was that they actually came through and they had destroyed this. It was one of those buddy cop movies, I think, or something. And they had come down the strip and they said, well, they were getting ready to demolish the interior of that. And I think this was the one they'd used. So that's why I thought this wasn't even here anymore.
Right.
But so I didn't, when they, how long has it actually been the Link, you know?
You know, I started here shortly after it was totally remodeled into the Link. We're going on to 18, 19 months. We're about a year and a half, approaching 2 years, yeah.
Okay. How long of rehearsal time do you have before the
Very, very quick.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we loaded, you know, they remodeled the room, and it was a quick turnaround to get the show in. It was just several weeks. I don't remember it. We actually rehearsed at another Caesars property. We rehearsed over at the Rio.
Okay.
And then brought the show over to here.
I see.
But... Yeah, it's they remodeled the whole room, you know, for the show. Mm-hmm. Because it, let me tell you, it needed it.
Yeah.
You know, it looked like it hadn't been remodeled in quite some time. And it mm-hmm. certainly hadn't had a paint job in 10 years. And anything more drastic than that had been 30 years. So the remodel was certainly in order.
Was that what was in the video? I thought there was one picture that showed in the remodel phase.
Yeah, they show the time lapse of like literally gutting out the whole theater and mm-hmm. it's all new everything.
Putting in the new seats and everything. So
Yeah, mm-hmm. they redid the whole shebang and they did it right. So yeah.
Now, when they had talked with you afterwards, in other words, that I was thinking after the first time that you were doing all this on your own and you had kind of a small dream.
Yeah.
After that first pass, at what point did you get a call from an agent or someone saying, you need to have some representation?
Well, I think I knew right away. I figured, okay, I have to surround myself with the right people. Luckily, you know, I've got a great business manager. Manager also, but business manager is different. And I think it's super...
How's that?
Well, it's just a totally different role. It's more on the financial side of things.
Financial, accounting and all, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Different than a financial advisor, different than an accountant. But a business manager was like the first... person to come on board, and
that's kind of like mom. Mom's just always said, you know, save your money. You know, don't be buying some candy. You know, you know, dress like this. Here's a nice pair of pants, or you know.
So. Well, I'll tell you what was lucky about it in my case, and so it doesn't need to be a business manager. It could be an agent. It could be a manager. It could be a publicist. It could be anybody. The person that stepped into that role for me was my former accountant from Rhode Island. You know, someone that I know and trust. Someone that's a family friend. Someone that. Was now living in Los Angeles and connected with various different people that I would need to meet and interview. So mm-hmm. he introduced me to various managers and agents that I could interview and try to surround myself with the right folks to create the right team. And I think that's you know, the important part.
Did they give you advice on who to get or who to talk to?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. You want to surround yourself with people that you feel comfortable bouncing things off of. You know, whether it's your magic folks around you, whether it's your friends, whatever it is.
But didn't you have a lot of people, I would imagine, afterwards who were coming to you and saying, let me show you this and why don't you try this idea or whatever. You know, I think it's a problem like with some comedians, whenever that they come up with an idea or something, I'm sorry, they're approached with someone who gives them a joke and they're a little bit reluctant to use it because it's like, well, is that an original joke you're telling me? You know, if it's not really a writer or something. So if someone shows you a trick, then it might be something that is not their original trick. They've got it from somebody else. And I mean, do you have people coming up all the time and showing you?
Yeah. You know, people show me stuff here and there. Usually it's close-up magic or something, which I never do.
Yeah.
You know, I never have an opportunity to show someone a trick.
But you do here on the stage.
Parlor.
You know, with, yeah.
You know.
Well, no, but you got the camera and overhead and all that, you know, with the coins. I mean,
we only use it, you know, when we need to.
Yeah, limited. Yeah.
When, I mean, how many times is the camera over the table? Twice.
Yeah, twice.
You know, it's really not a lot. It's a parlor show. But a lot of times what's hot now is close-up magic.
Yeah.
So that's always people are showing me the newest close-up thing, which I love to watch and see. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just few and far in between that I'm ever inclined to do a close-up trick.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Of course.
So, yeah I mean, but I do enjoy always seeing the new stuff.
Because I was just thinking that would be kind of an intimate thing, certainly, that would engage the audience as well, you know, as you did with the judges on AGT, you know, like when they walk up. And so by having somebody, well, you know, some of the card tricks you're doing, you know, with the card in the mouth and other mm-hmm. kinds of things, you're kind of close up. But by going out in the middle of the audience and then having the camera and everything,
we're doing things to make it feel bigger.
Bigger,
you know. And I think that's similar to I didn't mean to create a formula on America's Got Talent, but eventually the producers and I collaboratively did. Mm-hmm. You know, it always ended up being something intimate that people could connect with in terms of, okay, I'm going to go over to the judges' table and do this, mm-hmm. but then there's going to be this larger element that happens on stage.
Yeah.
So that's sort of, you know, and it works differently for television than it does live, so we make things bigger here differently than we did there, but it's that same type of thing where you want it to feel... connected, you want it to feel intimate, but also you want people to feel like they're not watching a screen the whole show, because that's not why they go see someone live. You want it to, I try to only use the screen when we need a screen, and that's it.
So does your magic team actually retain your vision, or do they give you ideas that you say, well, you know, I could bend my vision, that's a pretty good idea or direction you're suggesting?
You know, usually I'm consulting the folks that are helping on the know-how, on the engineering side.
Okay.
It's how are we going to make this crazy thing happen? Or how are we going to make sure it's surefire every show?
Every show.
And, you know, there's a great builder out here in Vegas, Tom Urbino.
Yeah.
And
I was supposed to talk to him. He's out of town this week. And my buddy David McGee was the one who had said, you need to talk to Tom. And I guess he's built stuff for Michael Carbonaro.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And, yeah, so he's on the road. I mean, he does a lot of stuff here, but he said he's a very creative guy. I talked to Bill Smith this morning. And, you know, he's a builder, but he said, I'm no Jim Steinmeier, you know. But I'd like to talk to Tommy.
Tom's like great. Yeah, the way his brain works is really interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, we do an allusion to the show, I guess I won't say here, but you and I had talked about it.
Yes.
And in 9 out of 10 times when you do this illusion in the show, it would be a trapped stage. Yeah. I don't think I'm letting any cats out of the bag here. There would be a trap door in the stage normally, and although they redid this room, there was no opportunity to trap this stage. So Tommy, along with Johnny Thompson, you know, had to sort of help in designing a way to do this illusion without a trapped stage, mm-hmm. fully lit in the middle of the room.
Yep.
You have to essentially disappear.
Right.
And the man, what he came up with, it's not something any of us had ever seen before. I assume if Johnny hasn't seen it, it's not out there.
So Tommy came up, not Johnny?
Together, but Tommy...
It was Tommy's basic idea.
He was really... Cool. Yeah, he was really... you know, Johnny can say, hey, can you build something like this? But then Tom has to sit down and figure out the issues with it.
Yeah.
You know, the realistic logistics of making that come to fruition.
I have a theory. We'll talk about it later.
Sure.
But, you know, on that, and you don't have to say yes or no, but, you know, knowing what I do about illusions, I'd like to discuss that because I would think, if I'm correct, the logistics would have to be crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine that this is pretty...
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. We'll talk
okay.
later.
Okay,
sure.
That's very interesting. Well, who else on your team then? You say, so Tommy and Johnny, and who else works with you for this show?
Yeah, you're looking at it. And Eric Dittleman, too. He was here when we loaded in. He was here when we worked on the lines and the material. Eric and I have always bounced things off each other.
Script-wise?
Since we met.
Too?
Script-wise, everything. Or this part's a little weird because this. And, you know, we've always just been really just brutally honest with each other about why we love or hate certain parts of our acts.
Yeah.
So he was there for me, you know, from beginning to end on this, too.
Because he was saying after the America's Got Talent, as far as he did, I mean, he had 2 years of contracts, you know, stuff that he was kind of working for a long time, so it was successful.
I got to tell you, though, you know, some of the best ideas really just come from people close to me that are not in the magic world.
Really?
Yeah, all the time. Like, those are the best ideas come from.
And we say ideas mean, like, people say... I wish I could see you do such and such.
Yeah, like, wouldn't it be cool if this...
If you walked up a building?
They just don't think in the constraints that magicians do. So, you know, before I was even on America's Got Talent, I'm sitting at a diner, my girlfriend and I, sitting at a diner. And she's like, wouldn't it be cool if you could cut open a seat, you know? And I'm like, I never would have... thought to cut open
a seat.
No, I literally said, what are you, crazy? They're not going to let me do that in the middle of Radio City Music Hall. That's like a legendary, iconic place. You think they're going to let this jerk walk in and start cutting seats open?
Right.
And, well, sure enough, when you get voted through and voted through and voted through week after week after week, and you don't know what to do next.
Doesn't seem quite as crazy.
Doesn't seem so crazy anymore. Yeah. And so I think, you know, the best ideas, honestly, just are crazy ideas that we might not think of as magicians because we think, we're in a certain box. We know what can and can't be done, and we have these certain constraints, and lay people don't. So friends and family and folks that come to the show that I know through other circles always have really, really good input. And you know what? That's my audience, too.
Sure.
It's lay people.
Yeah.
And that's who are here to... those are the people we're bringing the magic to.
Yeah, you got to listen to what it is that they want and their ideas and things like that, too. And again, I think that if magicians, I'm talking to myself as well, would step out of the magic box and look at the rest of the world around you. I mean, what is it that... I mean, obviously, there are only just like 9 elemental effects as far as, you know, things that you can do. But within that context, you know, what prop can you use using one of those elements, you know, that makes it... relatable to your audience.
Exactly.
And That comes from just reading and studying things outside, outside of magic, and that's living. And being aware of your surroundings when you're walking down the street that, yeah, you might be looking at a leaf. You know, I remember Wayne Houchin had sent a video to Banachek and me many years ago before he got to be who he was magic-wise, and he was doing some, and he came up, Banachek said, look at this video, brought it over to me and said, look at this, what he's doing. You know, he's got this this leaf or something, you know, that it seems like he signed it and then he ate it and, you know, and then it came back. I don't remember what it was. And then it came back. It was like on the tree again or something, you know.
Okay.
Or something's like, that's just cool, you know. And it was kind of an MTV type of a style, you know, the way that he was shooting at the time. Now, this was, golly, you know, we're in 2017 now, and this had to be in the 90s, I want to say. You know, he was still a teenager, I think, you know, at the time. But my point is, you know, you kind of look at the world around you and how can you make something that's going to be magic, you know, out of it. Because people challenge you, you know, when you're like at a restaurant, it's like, well, what, like the video you showed your brother was saying, hey, can you do something, you know, for the waitress? Oh yeah. And I think that that's what's important. It's not like, well, I don't have a deck of cards on me, you know.
Right.
And that goes back to what Jeff McBride was saying, be a magician 24/7, you know.
Sure.
If you're a magician, you should be able to do something all the time.
Yeah.
And it's not like, well, I didn't bring my coins with me, or, you know, I didn't bring my box illusion or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, right.
So it has to be something that's more improvisational. And I think that's the best thing, is, you know, with rubber bands or whatever, the salt shaker like you did, or, you know, or salt sugar packets or whatever. I think that you need to be able to do that, you know, and that comes from study of books and videos, I guess, and but also conversations with other magicians and bouncing off ideas and knowing how to get out of things. And through the different performances that you've had, you must have had a lot of things that have gone wrong that you've had to say, okay, well, I have a knowledge on how to get out of this situation.
Yes, things still go wrong all the time, and
mm-hmm.
it's just how to deal with it. You know, I think what you realize eventually, after enough things go wrong, you realize, look, life still goes on.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
The sun will come up tomorrow.
Worst case scenario, I'm going to be momentarily embarrassed.
Yeah,
I can deal with that. That's fine. Like, go through it enough times, and your skin will thicken. And the whole idea of being embarrassed for 10 seconds or 20 seconds, which might feel like an eternity in the moment,
mm-hmm.
is certainly okay. How do you get the audience back?
Right.
How do you make it work?
Yeah.
And once you sort of get over that fear of like, oh, I'm going to be embarrassed, once you know that's the worst thing that can happen,
mm-hmm.
it kind of makes you a little, just that much more invincible, where you don't have to worry about it as much.
Well, you have a lot of confidence on stage as well, and obviously that comes from just flight time, you know, and obviously in talking to people that are on stage, it's almost like a comedian. It's like, well, what do? You know, and then you've got a joke or something about whatever their career is or something. Not making fun of them, but it's just, you know what to say, and you kind of go with it, and people are digging it.
Tonight we had, participating in the show, someone who didn't speak English.
Right, right.
You know, and certainly that doesn't happen every night.
And then it was hilarious. I mean, you had a guy, you know, his name was Matt, with two T's.
Yes.
Know? But then to have this child, my name is Maddox, and you say, well, how many T's do you want? I mean, it's like, did you script this? You set that kid up there. It's like, no, of course you didn't.
Of course not,
But it was just that it seemed so, like, that's just cool.
Yeah, and those were genuinely improvised bits.
Sure. Sure.
And when you have a script and your script is down pat, and you know, Jeff McBride will talk plenty about this, you know, when you have it down pat, it gives you the opportunity to improvise, because you're not thinking about what to do next, what to say next. You can veer off of it because you're very much in the moment. You're not thinking about what you have to say. You're so in the moment because you have everything down. So you can very much respond to whatever takes place.
Mm-hmm.
In that moment, which is great.
Well, and that has to do with just having the confidence to know your act and where you're leading the audience and what happens to get there. Yeah, it should be generally scripted, but you should be able to go off record a little bit.
Exactly.
I mean, which, you know, I want to ask you about this. It's on topic and it has to do with timing in a casino. I remember years ago hearing stories about that you had to do a certain amount of time, and they would come in, you were 3 minutes over, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, because every minute that they're in here, they're not out gambling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that something that, I mean, do you have any kind of flexibility timing-wise, or?
Yeah, I have a great relationship with the folks here at the Link, so I've never been reprimanded for starting late or going over 3 minutes.
Okay.
But at the same time, I try to be respectful of the fact that, you know, the show is supposed to be X amount of time, and just go with it from there.
It's just that As I was growing into magic, people would say, well, you know, if you're going to do a 12-minute act, it should be 12 minutes. And here's the reason. Because if you're going to ever work in Las Vegas, if you go 13 minutes, you'll be out because, you know, that's another minute that they could have made this money or whatever. And so, you know, that was why it was important.
Those rules might be, you know, before my time. Yeah. Or maybe they don't exist at the property I'm at. Although I've played, you know, other casinos around the country and haven't found that to be an issue yet. Yeah. Although I do stick to my time pretty good. So maybe I just haven't been reprimanded because I stick to it.
Yeah, right. Because that's what I was saying about improvisational acting is you're talking with the audience and everything. If it's something that's going to be perfectly scripted or like with something that's an act that's done to music and so you know what your timing is going to be, you can obviously finish at a certain time. But when you're talking, it could go a little bit longer. You know, as they've said, you know, jokingly, that you got to figure, you know, time for laughter and applause. You know,
I try to compensate for whatever's going on. Tonight's audience that you were part of was particularly laughy. They literally were laughing all the time.
Yeah.
And I knew the show was going to run longer. So there were certain elements in the show that I pushed to make the move quicker because I think the show shouldn't be obnoxiously long, just for everyone's sanity, right? And I don't want to...
Well, you want to leave them
wanting more. You want them to leave them wanting more. So there were certain elements in the show that I pushed to make them go a little bit quicker because I knew that they were particularly laughy and certain bits just took extra long because they were enjoying themselves and you want to take those moments and let them breathe.
Sure.
You know, yeah. I love that back and forth with the audience. It's like playing an instrument, you know, and
that's a good
you
analogy.
feel their laughter and then you respond back and you go back and forth with each other. I love that. And in this size room, you can do that a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes in bigger rooms, you can't feel that same thing. Mm-hmm. Here, it's great.
Yeah, they seem to have that ability. I like that of being able to breathe because you have to hear what they're saying. You know, now have you had situations in which that the audience has been kind of dead? You know,
we see all different types of crowds. So I don't like to use the word dead, but certainly quiet. Quiet, and quiet isn't necessarily bad.
They could be thinking.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes
it's
the
like,
people
let your face know what's happening. You know?
Sometimes we never know what we're going to have. Sometimes it's just an older crowd that responds differently, and sometimes they're crazy and liquored up and we're full of bachelor parties and that sort of thing.
Or you
sometimes
ever get
hecklers? It's a mix.
I can't see you ever getting hecklers.
Very
hecklers.
Limited in terms of what you would call a heckler. I also know how to respond to them just based on performing colleges and performing all different types of audiences over the years, you know? Even just where I'm from, it's like, you know, Johnston, Rhode Island breeds hecklers, you know, these...
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, you know, the East Coast guys, everyone's a wise guy, you know? They want to come in with the line and... They want to get the joke, and I got used to that real quick, having older brothers, you know?
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, so we don't see a ton of it. I don't have a challenging style. I'm never challenging the audience. I'm never trying to pull one over on them. I'm not really trying to fool them. The magic tricks, in many cases, take a backseat to what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I just want them to be having fun, and they want to have fun, so usually they're on my side.
What if you had this gone wrong? I mean, people don't necessarily talk about a failure or something, but what has happened that you say, look, I just got to stop for a minute here, or have you ever had that situation?
I will never shut down the show and like stop for a minute.
Yeah.
We've had the cannon. We have a big cannon in the show. Three cannons, I guess. That we've had
but
them just not
fire. Or
just
something.
Not fire.
All three.
All of it. It's just this big build up
so
to
then
this
you just
moment.
Have to throw cards in the audience.
Well, right? We have backups in place.
Okay.
We've had that just not fire on several occasions. I guess the biggest error. The biggest mistake, this wasn't one that happened mid-show, but what happened was, are we doing okay with the audio?
Fine.
Yeah, the audio, I mean.
Yeah. Oh,
okay, because there's some music coming in. We're still backstage here.
Yeah.
I get a call from the stage manager around 6 o'clock, and the show's at 7. And he says, we have to cancel the show tonight. And I said, why is that? And he said, well, the D3 failed. So I asked what any other magician, what any other performer would ask, right? I'm not a tech guy.
Yeah,
what's the
D3?
D3? And he said, well, that's our, now I know. He said, well, that's our media server that controls everything for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you mean everything? He's like, well, the lighting and the video playback and the IMAG and the sound.
So that is serious.
yeah. Everything in the show that we use, it controls all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, well, I'm going to still come in as planned. And, you know, he said, well, we're working on it. We'll see what happens. I said, okay, I'm going to come in and see if we make any progress. So I get in, you know, 6:30 or so, whatever time it is. And doors are normally already opened at this point. And now they're it's a sold-out show, and they're holding everyone outside, not telling them anything. They just assume doors open 6:30, you know, instead of 6:15. They don't know what time doors open. And I said, well, like, can we just, like, have, like, lights on? Can I stand on stage and be visible? And he's like, yeah, I think we can do that. And I was like, okay. And I was like, can we find some way to play music, like, other than through the system that we normally use? And they said, well, yeah, I think we can figure out how to do that. And I said, well, let's let the people in. We have a show.
Yeah.
And I said, it's not going to be the exact same show. Yeah. But they're going to get a show. Yeah, sure. We're going to deliver a show. And look, we'll...
The show must go on.
The show must go on. And the audience, truthfully, wouldn't have known any different. You know, so the show went off without a hitch.
Without it? Really?
Absolutely. We did a show. And it was a different show.
Yeah.
And that was okay.
Yeah.
That was okay. I said, we're going to give them a show. So that was the you know, and I that was like the biggest sort of hurdle I think we'd have to jump over was doing the show without a show. But the truth is the magic is still there. I can still, and so is the character. We can bring them what they want to see. And look, they might not be able to reschedule for tomorrow night or the night later. This might be their last night in town, and they may have flown in from another country.
That's right. To see, right.
You know, and we do have that. We do, in many ways, you know, thanks to the television exposure and all of that, it's become a destination show where people do come to see it.
Yes.
And don't get me wrong, we have people that decide to see it an hour earlier. They were thinking, oh, should we see Mariah Carey or should we see Matt Franco? What's the difference? Who's this? Yeah. You know, we get that, of course, it's Vegas.
Who's Matt Carey?
Yeah. But, yeah, so we did our best to make the show go on. And we did a show. And you know what? We also offered the audience a voucher. I said two things. I said, as people exited the theater, they were given a voucher to come back and see the show, the other show. Anytime. Mm. Within the next, like, 5 years or something, and that's when it expires, you know, forever. And also said, anyone who doesn't have the time of their life, we offer you, wherever you got your tickets from, you can go back and get a refund. Mm-hmm. And out of the 600 people, we did issue 4 refunds.
Wow.
And you know what? That's certainly proud of that. Yeah. There's a certain percentage of people that are going to get the free ticket back, right? And, so we had a good time.
I was talking with Richard Faverty this afternoon. He was talking about when he was performing as Mr. Bubbles, that he had a time in which that all the lights went out except for just one light above him. It was like an incandescent light, and as he did this bubble routine. And he said everybody was quiet, and then at the end, that it just so happened that all the lights came back up. And all of a sudden, he got this standing ovation. And it's like that was the way it should have been, you know, almost kind of a thing. And he was telling about Copperfield once having a similar thing. I guess it must have been the D3 that went out. And then they started rehearsing with these flashlights. And they were going to do the show with these flashlights. And then just as the audience came in, it all came back on. So they were almost disappointed. It's like, we wanted to do it.
We were ready.
Yeah, we were ready to do this. Well, we start to wrap up, and I appreciate your time. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. And so my question to you is, what is your magic word? I mean, what is a phrase? What's your philosophy of life? It could be a sentence or just kind of, you know, what do you live for? You know, what's the word or words?
Words, yeah. You know, I don't have a magic word that I normally use. Yeah. Or, you know,
well, I don't mean like abracadabra or anything.
No, I know. And, you know, I'm not...
And it may vary from day to day. I mean, you may have a different philosophy today than you did yesterday.
Sure.
Or, you know.
I do certainly have a philosophy on magic. This is much more of a rant than a magic word.
Okay, here we go.
But look, during the show I talk about it. And I talk about how people, when they watch movies... Look, I think this is important because everyone knows how to watch a movie. Everyone knows how to listen to music. These are forms of media that people are consuming daily, all the time.
Right.
You get in your car, there's music on all the time. People don't consume magic daily, and we forget that. And even magicians, we watch magic differently than lay people should, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You watch a movie, most people are not overanalyzing the special effects, trying to figure out how they work. They know the movie's fake, they know it's fictional, but they love the movie anyway.
Sure.
With magic, it's not like that, and I believe it should be. I want the audience to come on the journey with me, less thinking, more enjoying. And I think that's the philosophy. Less thinking, more enjoying. Truthfully, like, am I fooling the audience? Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
But, like, that's not my interest. Like, and I don't reach everybody. There's a lot of the audience that walks out with the overwhelming feeling of, how did you do that? Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like I failed those people. But I love, you know, at meet and greets after the show, the ones that I do reach. That smaller percentage who says they were just here and they were analyzing the show the whole time. And then at some point, a switch went off and they realized they could sit back and enjoy it. in the same way they would a movie, and they decide they voluntarily suspended their disbelief.
Right.
I love that moment where they realize this isn't about tricks. There's something more here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm seeing through to someone.
Yeah, you're transcending the trick itself to something that the magic is and the mystery is beyond that.
Yeah, we want to make people care, right?
Yeah,
we want to, because 90 minutes of how you do that can get pretty boring. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that was amazing. Oh my God, that was amazing. Oh my God, that was amazing. And at some point, it becomes repetitive.
Isn't that kind of like what Steven Spielberg was doing, I guess, with Jaws? They, you know, that he just had like one moment. It's like, you know, we need a bigger boat. When that shark came out of the water, because his philosophy was, I don't want to be like a horror movie where that, you know, around every corner something jumps out, because after about the second or third time, you've lost the impact of that.
Yeah.
And you've got a few of those big gasping moments.
Sure.
You know, it's not like, you know, oh my gosh, you know, all the time. You know,
right.
You've got a good rhythm, I think. You know?
You've got to have different elements and arcs to the storyline. But if you look at a performer like Bill Malone, who's an amazing...
That's funny you mentioned that, because Robin Leach did mention him. He said he's my favorite magician.
And rightfully so.
Bill is amazing.
Look, he's such a great close-up... He's such a great magician. I'm not going to limit it.
Yeah,
he's a great magician, period. He's a great performer, period. And he's so funny and entertaining that even as magicians, never mind lay people, but even as magicians, we forget how skilled this guy is.
Yeah.
He really is.
It's like David Williamson. You know, he's so disarming, but he really, you talk about somebody who's got the chops. Ooh, golly.
The chops are amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think the way Bill Malone, he'll tell you, you know, as long as people are laughing and having a good time, his job is done. That's what he's hired to do.
Mm-hmm.
To entertain people, to give them a good time. If they're laughing and having a good time, if you check those boxes, he considers his work done. He never mentions fooling them or blowing their mind or like, that's so not what it's about,
right?
For me too.
To forget the problems of the day, you know?
Yes, that's the real magic, right?
Yeah.
Let them forget for 2 seconds about the emails they need to catch up on and their work.
That's it.
And that's the magic. And I think it's less thinking, more enjoying.
I like that. Less thinking, more enjoying.
And I'm quoting too, Vinny, who's actually Tom Rubino's husband, and Vinny works backstage here. He's our magic technician, and you know, he's been in magic a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget when he said it to me once backstage, and things just fly out of his mouth. He doesn't even remember saying it, because I talked to him about this last week.
Remember when you said?
Yeah.
I said that.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, less thinking, more enjoying. That's your quote. I asked him, can I use that? And he's like, yeah, of course, blah, blah, blah. And it's funny, we were talking about it last week. He's like, yeah, you know, there's some things that I said that you use in the show, right? And I was like, yeah, less thinking, more enjoying. That's yours. He goes, that was mine? Absolutely. You're the one who said it. You know, and those are my magic words. Less thinking, more enjoying.
Perfect. That's the way to wrap it up. And, you know, I meant to ask you something a little bit earlier. You've been on here for 18 months, but have you come across any rabid fans yet who've actually tattooed themselves with your name or face?
Oh boy, have I seen tattoos?
Of you. I mean, you know, like where that... the reason I ask that is because I just was talking with Marcy Hume, who was the director, co-director, and producer of the documentary Magicians Hiding the Impossible, Hidden in the Impossible, or something like that. And Jan Ruven had a show here, you know, called Illusions for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And during the filming of this, there was some lady who had tattooed Illusions.
Yeah,
I just wonder if you'd ever come across. I know that Chris Angel's got people. I mean, I've been backstage to see that.
But. Yeah, we see quite a bit of things along those lines, and we've seen tattoos. Yeah, we've seen people, you know, driving from long distances, coming multiple times. We have regulars that come often. I love it.
Yeah,
I love the devotion that we have here. You know, it really is great.
The fans,
fantastic fans. You know,
I
put up our fans up against any fans of any, you know, all sorts of, you know, you see crazy things. People, you know, Comic Con and all these things.
Yeah, sure.
People like to get involved in those sorts of things. People will bring signs. People bring, you know,
cosplay,
all sorts of,
yeah.
And it's really cool.
Yeah,
it's really crazy, and I love that. I you know what? I mean, couldn't be more thankful to have that type of. That type of support, and I love being able to shake their hand, meet them, and say thank you in person.
Exactly.
And I love the way, you know, social media connects us too.
Boy,
so not only do I get to see these things in person, but for those that are in other countries or that don't make it to Vegas and that sort of thing, or if I don't make it to their town, you know, I get to see a lot of this stuff transpire through the internet. And oh my God, letters and things of, oh God, we get some really touching moments.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God!
Someone had was having cancer or whatever, and that this just made them forget about their woes of the day.
I'll tell you, sometimes I'll have someone on stage, and you know, I'll talk to the crew after this just happened to me last week, and one of the shows on the road, and you know, I really wasn't sure. It was a routine that's actually not in the Vegas show. It was something we put together specifically for the road, and people react to things in different ways. We talked about this a little bit. Some react, audiences are louder than others, but sure. It also is true for an individual basis. And the girl, the woman that I had on stage, wasn't particularly energized or like particularly reacting in a traditional way. Mm-hmm. But then I, from her and her boyfriend, received these very detailed messages or comments, I should say, on Instagram, mm-hmm. and that I saw either later that night or the next day, and the crew and I couldn't believe it, because we had talked about how, oh, like, I wonder if we could have done something differently to make this play better, blah blah blah, and we thought maybe she wasn't. It was almost, we thought maybe she was too cool for school. We didn't know. The reaction was just different than what we had anticipated.
Okay.
And man, were both of their lives very strongly affected by being involved in the performance. You know, her boyfriend wrote to me as well about being into magic when he was younger, and then being bullied and mm-hmm. talked out of it, basically. Mm-hmm. Left magic for a period of time, and then had seen me on America's Got Talent just 2 years ago, which inspired him to get back into it. And then they met together, and she encouraged his magic, and her being part of this show tonight was inspirational to them and their relationship together. Sorry if I'm ranting here, but wow, like, sometimes you're affecting people. You know, sometimes it's just like a, hey, wow, this was an okay night. Hey, this guy was pretty good.
You really don't know who you're touching.
And other times you really are affecting people on a
deep level.
On a deep level, and that is a really cool thing. Yeah, sorry to get a little sappy there, but wow.
No, not at all.
Yeah, those things and the letters we get, it's just really, really cool to see that.
Well, good. I'm glad you do, and you deserve to get those kinds of letters, and you'll be getting a lot more in your career as your success continues, and I hope that it does. So again, those words are?
Less thinking, more enjoying.
There we go.
Thanks, Vinny.
It's over the Magic Word podcast. That was Matt Franco, and this is Scotty out.
Well, thank you, Matt. I appreciate your time and your words and your friendship and allowing me to come backstage and giving me some of your valuable time, and also for the opportunity to see your wonderful show. And I recommend for, again, anyone listening to the podcast, if you have an opportunity in Las Vegas to go see a show, make it the Matt Franco show, because it really is a wonderful show, great personality. I think it's a great bargain, family-friendly, and if you're going to be going out with the family or not, just even if on some business, I would recommend stopping by to see this show. It's not a big spectacular illusion show or Cirque du Soleil or any of that kind of stuff, but if you want to see something that is character-based or personality-based, I should say, be sure and go see Matt. What a wonderful show. I would recommend that very much. So again, Matt, great show, great times, great thoughts, and thanks very much for sharing. All right, well, it's time now for another product review from Murphy's Magic Supplies. All of these are available from your favorite magic dealer, or you can get them here through the Magic Word. Just go to the Magic Store and click on the link, and they are available there. If there is something, by the way, that you don't see on the Magic Store, but you'd like to buy through the Magic Word podcast, which, of course, we certainly would appreciate your business, just let me know, and I'll be sure to add that link to the website. Right now, everything that's listed over there are just things that I have reviewed, but if there are some other things that you have in mind, just let me know. I'm sure that we can put those on there so that way you can purchase it then as well. And if you want it, that means probably several other people are interested in that product as well. So let's get started with the product that I want to review here today, which is called the Matrix Pad Reloaded. And this is by Richard Griffin. And this, apparently, what they call it Reloaded is because it is a new version updated from the other, and I'll tell you why in just a moment. The effect, as described on the back of the box, says a small notepad is shown. Let me say, I guess they can't say Post-it notepads, but basically it's one of those little yellow sticker sheets that with Post-it notes. You know what I'm talking about. Okay, four spots are then drawn, one in each corner of the pad with a Sharpie, which I guess you can say Sharpie, since even though that is, never mind. So one by one, with the rub of the finger, the spots are visibly moved to end up in the corner of the pad, hence the name Matrix, or as we would say, the Matrix pad, because you are making this with a little notepad, and it is a Matrix effect. And the top sheet, then, with all the spots, all in one corner, is peeled off and given to the spectator to examine and keep. And you can sign it or whatever you want them with as well. Of course, I always think it's important that while that you've got it, you might as well put your name and your website. In my case, you just put your name, scottwells.com. Anyhow, the idea, as Richard had explained on the DVD that accompanies this, which, by the way, it comes with a couple of notepads and all the gimmicks and everything that you need in order to make it and to redo it several times. The DVD is not that long, about 16 minutes or so in total, plus a couple of minutes for the presentation. But once you get the idea, everything can be remade or reloaded, and you can use them in perpetuity. In other words, that even though the pad will eventually get used up, you just go get another Post-it notepad and replace it, and you're good to go. A couple things about this. First of all, as he explains, the reason of the name is called the Matrix Pad Reloaded was because it was based upon or inspired by the Matrix routine of Al Schneider's, in which the four coins are on your close-up pad covered with some cards, and they're moved around such that the coins then all end up in one corner. This has been reinvented many times by many people, and I think Shute Ogawa's got some of the best working on that, but I know a lot of other guys have some touches as well, but I really like Shute's routines with that. And as I said, almost every other magician has got some touches or work on the Matrix routine using the coins, but in this particular case, it's a moving hole. And what I like about this trick is the fact that something physical moves as opposed to coins. Coins are something that can be moved, but something that's drawn on a pad of paper cannot. Much like the pothole trick of Mike Close. The pothole trick is not referenced in this DVD, but it reminds me of that, in which something physically altered on the paper itself is moved. In other words, like with Mike's idea, that the pothole that you've drawn, a street basically, you take a punch and you punch out a hole, which looks like that there's a pothole in the street, and then you can move that hole from the card over to another business card and leave the hole there for them. It's a very cool effect, and I love it. This also is something in which seems impossible and also is given to the volunteer at the end, because whenever you peel off that piece of paper, hand it to them, they can again keep that, examine it, and whatever. So it is called Reloaded, then, because this is the next variation of this. As I understand it, he said, and I guess I'll be kind of tipping it a little bit here, the magnets of the spots that are moved are 10 times stronger than the ones from the original. So if you have the original or had lost the small magnets or they weren't working and you were disappointed with that, I highly recommend that you take a look at this, because they are very well made, very strong, and probably won't get lost as easily. He also has a nice little holder that it comes in, so this way that it fits neatly in your pocket, and that way that it will help keep the spots from being lost. They are ultra thin, very strong magnets, and I haven't ever seen anything that is quite like this, and it really works great. And I think this is a marvelous little effect. And one of the inspirations for the development of this trick was the Martin Lewis cardiographic, because with the cardiographic, once you've drawn a picture on a piece of paper, you peel it off, hand it to the volunteer, they can go back to their seat, and they have a souvenir for life. Likewise with this, once that you have aligned the four marks or holes or the drawings or the dots, I guess, you've drawn with this Sharpie pen, once they've all aligned, you hand that to them. So again, it's kind of a variation or an inspiration from what he has done. That is, from what Martin Lewis had done. So anyhow, I think this is a great little trick. It's great for walk around. As he said, you can probably do this up to 20 times. I think that's probably about right, because otherwise, well, you could do it more than that, but you're going to need to replenish your Post-it notes pad that you put in this gimmick. One tip that I would suggest also, that if you get this and you live in the United States, you'll need to, although it comes with two notepads, they're not Post-it notes. Now, the glue that is used that are on the notepads that come with this, in my opinion, aren't quite as strong as the glue that's on the post-it, the original Post-it notes. So I would recommend highly that you would use Post-it notes. And if you live over in the UK or somewhere where that you don't have that brand, this glue that comes with this brand, maybe it was just a cheaper off-brand that he had picked up and put in this. So first thing I would do is not to use the notepads that he supplies, but rather use original Post-it note brand, because once you get into this and you see the gimmick and how that it works, it's important that it has a little bit more stickiness to it, if you will. So I would recommend using Post-it notes. Also, by the way, the Post-it notes are the very same size, so you don't have to trim them down or anything. It does fit the gimmick perfectly. And as I said, this is a perfect thing for a walk around. Certainly, you can. It only takes about 5 seconds to reset. It's something that's completely different, not a card trick, not a coin trick. It's just a trick. It is something that really kind of fools a person, because it really messes with their mind that something physically moves the way that it does, and then you can hand it out, not just for examination, but for them to keep. Anyhow, I think you got the idea. I like it a lot. Highly recommend it. And it is called The Matrix Pad Reloaded by Richard Griffin. This product and others are available from Murphy's Magic Supplies, and you can purchase them over in the Magic Store here on the Magic Word Podcast or through your favorite magic dealer. So however you prefer to purchase your magic supplies, make sure that they come directly from Murphy's Magic Supplies to you through your favorite magic dealer. And as I said, hopefully that the Magic Word is one of your favorite magic dealers, and you'll consider supporting us by purchasing your products from the Magic Word. Well, I think we'll wrap up this week with just that one product review. And again, I hope that you have enjoyed not only this podcast with Matt Franco, but also all of the dozen more that have preceded this in the Las Vegas Chronicles. It's been a lot of fun, and these guys have been spectacular in giving me their time and their words. And so, again, to each of them, I thank you, and thank you many, many times. And also to all of you listeners, I thank you. And also, I want to thank the Friends of the Magic Word, because it was because of their financial support that allowed me to make that trip out there. And if you're interested in helping to defray future costs and other kinds of things that are going to be similar to this, then please consider making a one-time donation or an ongoing donation to the Magic Word Podcast. If you just go over to the website at themagicwordpodcast.com, you can click on the tab over there that says how to become a friend of the Magic Word. There's a video that tells you a little bit about this and also how that you can go about supporting it. And consider this: if you're going to be wanting to buy me a cup of coffee or perhaps a single malt scotch or a martini or something, then how much is this worth to you each month? I mean, this comes to you every week, and whenever I'm at magic conventions, it comes to you every day to give you an upload of what's going on at the convention and who's doing what, who's there, and everything like that. This is up to the minute information that you're not going to be getting elsewhere, but I know this is something that supplements your other magic information that you get from Genie Magazine, the MUM, the Linking Ring, the Magic Circular, other kinds of magazines throughout the world, as well as Vanish Magazine and the Magic Cafe and Genie Forum. There are other kinds of places where that you can get magic information, but hopefully that you're enjoying this. And if you are, then I would appreciate your financial support for whatever value that you think this is worth to you. And one last thing, too, as a reminder, that if you are going to be buying anything online through Amazon.com, be sure to use the link on themagicwordpodcast.com. If you go over there to the Amazon affiliate store link and you can click on that link, it will take you to Amazon and you can buy anything that you want. But because it's an affiliate and we are aligned with the Amazon store, that a little bit of your purchase will come back then to the Magic Word. So if you don't want to send us any money as a donation, that's fine. But if you're planning on purchasing something online through Amazon, you can still help us that way. Same thing through the Magic Store. A little bit of whatever that you buy from the Magic Store also stays with the Magic Word. So however that you wish to support us, it's all appreciated. And if not, just please keep coming back week after week and enjoying listening to this, and tell your other friends about this also and help spread the word. So for now, until next time, stay well, get booked, and as Matt Franca would say, consider less thinking and more enjoying. I like that. This is Scotty out.